Welcome to Classy Ring Attire. I'm Joel.
I would be Chris.
And we've got some wrestling to class up.
Let's class up some wrestling.
We are, I think, 2 weeks away from Extreme Rules.
Roughly, yes.
Approximation. And it's starting to take shape.
Slowly.
We have three matches announced so far. And I wanted to take a look at those matches today. Okay. Because I was looking over the card, the minimal card that we have right now. And so the obvious match is Lesnar and Cena. And because it's Extreme Rules, we have all the stipulations. These are Extreme Rules, blah, 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 whatever. But Lesnar and Cena, the stipulation is just an Extreme Rules match. Which
means it's falls count anywhere, anything goes.
Is it
no DQ?
Are they adding on falls count anywhere into that?
Might as well, I guess.
I mean, I assumed it was pretty much a no disqualification, no count out.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much what they imply in it. I'm not exactly sure. Like they always play fast and loose with the definition of some of these matches. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're going to make it up as they go. Like they usually do.
Whatever's good for this,
for this story. It's just like a regular match where they pay attention to certain rules, but they kind of go slack on some other rules just for the sake of that particular match.
Yeah. So. Well, but it was announced this week on Raw that Punk and Jericho were going to be in a Chicago street fight match. Which I'm assuming is just a street fight match that happens to take place in Chicago.
Yeah, I wouldn't really know what distinguishes a Chicago street fight from a regular street fight, but I guess we'll see in 2 weeks.
And, I mean, a street fight match is also pretty much just anything goes, no DQ, no count out. But with an emphasis on weapons, but...
Emphasis on weapons, and it kind of alludes to falls count anywhere kind of situation.
Yeah.
I mean, in the title it does. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense for it, to be a street fight and then it not being a street.
Yeah. Well, at one point, street fight was also included not wearing wrestling gear. It was, street clothes as well.
Right.
I think TNA has held on to that more than WWE has.
Yeah, I mean, at most I would think CM Punk might wear one of his shirts and, the black shorts.
Yeah.
And what is Jericho going to wear? A flashy jacket and jeans?
Can't wear that jacket. Somebody's going to get electrocuted in the middle of a fight.
Well, no. He's been wearing the black and gold one lately.
I know. I'm a little bummed.
No light brights?
Yeah.
From what I understand, he kept having some, electrical difficulties with it. Like, the original one kind of, was messing up there at the end. And the one that he used in WrestleMania, one entire arm didn't work, if you go back and look at it.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
It is a shame.
I missed the light bright jacket.
Yeah. But I guess it really wouldn't fit with the current, your father is a drunk kind of storyline.
Yeah.
Kind of takes the seriousness away from it.
Well, I gotta say, I really feel like, usually these kind of things, I'm assuming that Chris and Jericho, or Punk and Jericho, are gonna fight one more time at Over the Limit, because that's how it always is. The title match from WrestleMania goes two more pay-per-views. But it really feels like the way they're setting it up, it would be really nice to end this feud at Extreme Rules, since it will be, in Punk's home state. It's probably pretty easy to get his family there. He mentioned it this week on Raw, that, he can beat Jericho down in front of his dad and his sister, who Jericho has pretty much dragged into this feud.
Right.
So, it would be nice to, storyline-wise, to end it here. And this is a situation where, usually having these feuds go past WrestleMania feels like it undercuts the importance that WrestleMania is supposed to have.
Right, because it almost seems like if it can't be solved at WrestleMania, then, you know, WrestleMania isn't good enough.
Right.
Almost. You know, like, you would think that that big event would be, like, you know, I beat you on the big stage, so nothing else matters from this point. But yet they keep going.
Exactly.
But I mean, I understand there's, like, a logical line of thought from WrestleMania, so, I mean, I'm for it, and I'm also against it. Like, I'm against it because I'm tired of seeing the same thing every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But I'm for it because it's logical.
I mean, yeah, there's...
To an extent.
There's not, you know, it's because you have to show up 24 hours after WrestleMania and do a whole nother show with, you know, feuds and storyline in it again. There's no off-season.
No, they get right back into it. I would like to just mention one thing at this juncture.
Good.
Last week, we made predictions about, you know, things that would happen. And, you know, a lot of my match predictions for next year's WrestleMania weren't that far off. They weren't, you know, extravagant or extreme, if you want to use that word.
Yeah.
But there were some side predictions that I had made. And I'm just throwing this out there, you know, just for kicks and giggles for the kiddies.
Yes.
Since it's a street fight in Chicago, wouldn't it be interesting if someone came to the aid of CM Punk? A certain culty, cabana-ish type person. Because one of the predictions I made was that at WrestleMania, Colt Cabana will be in CM Punk's corner.
Yeah.
And I backed it up by saying that in the photo diary that CM Punk did for .com, Colt Cabana was pretty prevalent in those.
Yeah.
They didn't try to block him out like they did in Money in the Bank. Money in the Bank, they tried to cut away from Colt Cabana as much as they could.
Yeah.
You know, barely showing the back of his head. So.
That's one of the things, like, every time somebody starts, you know, armchair booking the next 6 months or what they would do if, you know, they had the power, it's always the perfect time to bring in Colt. Which, it's the same thing with that and with, you know, the perfect time. How many times in the past year have we heard, this is the perfect storyline to turn Cena heel in? Like...
Well, yeah, but that's just, you know... That's something people are going to argue regardless.
Yeah, but I think it's the same for Colt. You know, CM Punk leaves and comes back last year. It'd be the perfect thing where storyline, he'll only come back if you bring back Colt. Perfect thing where WWE storyline-wise can say, well, we could replace Punk with Colt Cabana, and then we have a Punk and Cabana feud going on. You know, there's lots of... There's plenty of times in the past year where that would have been, quote-unquote, the perfect time to bring in Colt Cabana. Not saying that Extreme Rules isn't another one of those situations. Like, because Jericho's made it personal, etc., etc., this will be a great time to bring in Colt Cabana. But, I don't know.
It's, Joel.
Yes.
Joel.
Yes.
Stop being such a bubble buster.
You're
ruining the fun.
I'm sorry.
But with your logic and your reasoning and your things that make sense mouth of yours, I know. Stop busting the bubble. Just go along with it and let me have my giddiness over the possibility of having a prediction come true.
Let me amend. There is no way I can see Extreme Rules ending without it being Colt Cabana tag teaming with Optimus Prime and beating everybody.
That's more like it.
I'm sorry. I'm glad to...
You should be. You should be.
Well, I was talking with a friend from high school about talking about predicting WrestleMania like we did last week and trying to predict a year in the future. And so
yeah.
We were talking about the idea of basically, you know, looking down the line, we feel almost guaranteed that some point, you know, a lot of people have fantasy booked it for next year. But even though they haven't, I feel kind of agree that some point down the line, we're going to get CM Punk versus Stone Cold. Like,
right.
that's a WrestleMania match that has to happen. And so other quote-unquote WrestleMania...
And you're thinking kind of is, you know, if The Rock came back, then anything's possible kind of mentality, am I correct?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, go on.
I mean, also right now, that's just kind of the thing to do is they're bringing back...
They're big guys.
The, you know, everybody who got a one more match chant is now basically getting their one more match. And obviously, if Stone Cold is to have one, not only has he voiced that he wants to face Punk, and Punk has voiced that he wants to face Stone Cold, but
everyone else is jumping on board.
Yeah, and character wise, it's not, you know, it's extremely reasonable. The build-up makes perfect sense.
Very true.
It would feel very natural. It would not feel forced to have these two people feud. But I was thinking about other matches that would have to be WrestleMania matches in the next 5 years. Not trying to predict what happens within the next year to result in WrestleMania 29. But much more in general, you know, what would be a WrestleMania match in the future? Like, the way it's going, I really feel in the next couple of years, we're going to get a title unification match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I definitely see that one on the horizon because we're seeing less and less of a brand split between the two shows. So, it makes sense to me, yeah.
And I really feel like the next time we have a Cena versus Punk match, it will be WrestleMania. Because, you know, both of them have long enough careers left that I feel like they will have to feud again. Should Cena ever turn heel, which I feel like he will at some point in his career, because...
Yeah, I mean, like... I can't think of anyone who really hasn't turned. Someone who's gone their whole, like, someone who's already, you know, their career's already come and gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, can't really argue about guys like Ziggler or whatever, but.
No, but I mean.
You would think.
Yeah, look at.
You would think it would have to happen, because even The Rock, you know, turned a few times.
The Rock turned.
After he became widely popular.
Right. Hogan turned. Like, that's the...
Yeah, and that's the guy who's probably closest to the Cena-type popularity.
Yeah, well, to the... I mean, and he was the same kind of eat your vegetables, say your prayers, always do your best kind of face.
Yeah, and that was the overall effectiveness of NWO, because no one saw that coming.
Right.
Like, it fooled everyone. And if they were able to pull something like that off, probably if they were able to pull that off, like... I don't know, a few years ago, it would have been huge. Like, even with the internet following or whatever, no one would see that coming. Everyone would be absolutely floored by it. Now it's almost like "Hat told you was coming" kind of mentality.
Yeah.
I felt like they kind of missed that surprise aspect of it all. To be honest with you, they missed it with Nexus.
Is that when you think it should have happened?
I think that was kind of... I don't know if we would have gotten the surprise element because that was when it really started that people were like, you know, Cena needs to turn heel quick.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was because the next storyline was feeling stale after a few months.
Well, I mean, we can point to almost weekly problems with where the next storyline could have gone better. I think the big thing is when at SummerSlam, when they went, you know, with a basically 7-on-7 elimination match, I don't think it should have been all top cards on the Raw side, on Team Raw. I think it should have been Cena championing a bunch of Evan Bourne level kind of, you know, mid-card faces who, you know, and that would have elevated, you would have had a whole new generation then. You would have had 7 heels and 6 faces all at the mid-card range establishing their, you know, they're passing the torch next generation stuff right there, which didn't mm-hmm. happen. It ended up being all the old established guys
squashing Nexus.
Yeah. Squashing the up and comers back down to the bottom. And
some guys still haven't recovered from that.
Right. But then, you know, look at who was on Team WWE or Team Raw back then. Edge has retired. Jericho was gone for a long time.
A year and a half, yeah.
And probably, to be honest, will start taking longer and longer breaks, you know, in the fairly near future.
Yeah, I mean, he's already, you know, having to split up his time between touring and appearances and wrestling. Like, so I don't... I don't know their aspect or their expectation is with that.
I remember probably my favorite, it was the most outlandish and would never happen, but my favorite fantasy booking that I read about at the time came from an article or an interview with Triple H, who, if you remember, was off filming Chaperone at the time.
Okay.
But right before that, he was on fairly regularly, like, you know... He wasn't doing these once a year appearances.
That was back when he was feuding with Sheamus, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's what knocked him out, but
right.
Like he had that feud with Sheamus, and right before that he had the whole little DX run against Legacy for a long time. But he was talking about, you know, acknowledging that Shawn Michaels had pretty much recently retired, and if he was close to retiring at all. And he said in the interview that he wanted to have one more really good heel run before retiring. And so the booking was based on that he would come in and take over Nexus and basically, you know, through Nexus rule, you know, take down the company with kind of an iron fist. And at some point... like break down the Undertaker so bad that Undertaker had to make a call to Shawn Michaels and tell him that, you know, that, and the Undertaker would give Shawn Michaels a blessing to return to the ring to face Triple H. And that would have been the main event of whatever the next WrestleMania was at the time, which
not a bad idea.
I know,
if Nexus hadn't fizzled like it did.
Exactly.
And
that's what's saddest about Nexus is
so many ways to go right. CM Punk wasn't a bad move. The bad move was the new Nexus dwindling down to 4 members.
Yeah.
You know? And then the core. The core just killed everything.
The core. I wish the core had worked better.
I don't know if it was just the name or the logo or just it seemed to pop up out of nowhere. A lot of the big pop from the Nexus was its origins, like that first time they came out and attacked Punk and Cena in the ring and dismantled everything and, you know, got Daniel Bryan fired. It took everyone by surprise.
Yeah,
and you know, and it seemed like okay, this is going to be a legit thing. And it was for a while. But,
I mean...
Core didn't have that. Core just had, you know, Wade Barry's like, oh, hi, I'm on SmackDown now. And he's the guys that didn't want to follow Punk, so they're with me. Oh, and... what's his name?
And we got Ezekiel Jackson. Yeah,
and Zeke just randomly joined him. There was no explanation there. It just happened.
The thing is, I don't know if there is enough of a... You know, there's enough room for 2 heel factions in the company, even if they're on different shows like that.
It would have been much more effective if one was face, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I agree completely.
And to acknowledge each other, because they're both in the WWE, even if they're on different shows and theoretically going for different titles and stuff.
Yeah.
The fact that Wade Barrett was kicked out of Nexus should have stung or whatever. He should have harbored some resentment.
Yeah,
and a faction versus faction feud is totally fine. Especially one that could have gone cross shows, you know, with...
I mean, you saw that at that year's Royal Rumble. That was really the only time where the two factions acknowledged each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's... And that kind of made it seem like there was some sort of start point for that. But it really didn't go anywhere past that Royal Rumble. You know, it just... CM Punk started going after Randy Orton at the time, and... The core just was going after the Big Show, I think.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of where it stayed.
Yeah.
You know, it...
I mean...
And it would have helped if the core, or whatever they would decide to call it, was some sort of face faction. Like you said, it would have been, you know, mid-carders, maybe led by a veteran. Could have been Randy Orton. You never know.
Yeah.
Going up and trying to take down Nexus. You know. But instead, they were like, well, let's make a Nexus 4 SmackDown.
Yeah. Which,
and it didn't work.
Yeah, the thing was, you know, people...
Man, their crappy theme song.
People had seen Nexus for 6 months, and they didn't need the exact same thing, but red.
True.
Which is exactly what the core was. I'm torn about CM Punk taking over Nexus... I did like the Nexus needs a new leader thing, because what I really did like was the tables, ladders, and chairs match as a storyline thing, where it was very soundly John Cena defeating Wade Barrett at this final pay-per-view of the year, which, you know,
right.
And the year had built up enough that it felt like Wade Barrett was a credible opponent for John Cena at that point. Like,
yeah.
If that match had happened the week after the invasion, I'd have been like, Cena's going to squash him. There's no way this NXT guy can stand up to Cena.
And at that point, you know, Wade Barrett has kind of been holding his own in singles matches.
Right. So I did like that build up. I didn't like the chairs landing on the thing, shielding. I hated that, and I hated that they showed that 19 times just to give you all the angles of Wade Barrett being completely safe.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
Yeah.
But I liked the fact that it did result in Nexus questioning Wade Barrett as a leader and seeking out a new leader. Punk might have been too big a deal for that, is the only thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Punk had, you know, had his own stuff.
And also, there was no, like, now we're going to take down John Cena thing with CM Punk and the new Nexus. It just completely overlooked him, and they had a short thing against Wade Barrett and the core, and then that was it.
Yeah.
You know? To be honest with you, I was ready to see John Cena versus CM Punk at that point.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, looking back, it's fantastic that we didn't see it until Money in the Bank. But, at that point, I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing these two go at it. And I was kind of disappointed they didn't run with it.
That was the time where Randy Orton was feuding with The Miz for the belt, right? Because they basically switched opponents for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because that was around the time Randy Orton... That was when Randy Orton got drafted over to SmackDown.
Right.
And...
Well, that was after WrestleMania, so...
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the draft happens after WrestleMania. You're right. I misspoke. You're correct.
But I'm assuming behind the scenes, at that point, they knew that The Rock was going to be coming back and taking on Cena. So, you know, I'm assuming the at least behind the scenes... ideas for that storyline were already happening, and basically Cena needed to get back into the title scene for that.
I would hope so. I would hope they'd have some sort of, you know, forethought.
But what happens is what happens. I feel like probably CM Punk's impending contract probably hindered what was left of the Nexus.
Yeah, because
at the time,
it eventually just turned into CM Punk tagging with Mason Ryan.
Yeah,
you know, I think the pay-per-view after WrestleMania, I believe it was the only thing CM Punk did was be in a tag match with Mason Ryan. Because I know the night before the announcement, the infamous Snow Angel incident. I know that was Capital Punishment, and he was up against Rey Mysterio at the time.
Well,
which didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it was, again, kind of like, the guy's going to leave, we don't really have much going for him. And I'm also sure at that point they were like, you know, we have this program coming up where we're going to play into CM Punk leaving and everything. So,
I mean,
it was kind of him being a part of Nexus just seemed to be an awkward segue.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it didn't help that he brought in Mason Ryan, and then it was very much him and Mason Ryan, and original Nexus members were kind of flannel on the side. You remember for a long time, it was just McGillicuddy and Otunga being tag team champions, but with really nothing to do, because they were champions of pretty much a dead tag team division.
You mean like Epico and Primo now?
Yes. Yes, I do.
The only thing they can do is get squashed by Big Show and Great Khali.
Oh, why do you sadden me?
Because I can and it makes me happy.
Yeah.
Wow, we are really going on about some Nexus.
Nexus?
That was not in our plan.
Nexus is going to be, it's going to be one of the, because it is, it's going to be one of the biggest storylines of all time.
Because it was one of the few things in this day and age that took us completely by surprise.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do with the internet wrestling community right now. You can't take a lot of us by surprise anymore.
I mean,
and you can't really come up with something that will make all of us collectively mark out and not care about kayfabe or behind the scenes stuff. Like, in that moment, we were all like, okay, this is pretty awesome.
I think I can count on one hand the number of times Raw has gone off the air and I've been genuinely frustrated about it and anxious to get to the next week and go, what? I need to know what the fallout is right now. And one of them is the Nexus, and another one is CM Punk's, you know, breaking the fourth wall shoot. And that one was kind of undermined because they did.
Yeah, because they recorded the next one right after it.
Yeah, so I was like, oh man, what's
that
happening?
I'll
just go to the internet and find out.
That was just unfortunate timing.
It was. Oh. It was because it was 4th of July that year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was a big letdown. But, you know, but I don't think it takes anything away from that promo and how I felt when that episode went off of I need to express to someone the emotions that I'm feeling right now.
Although, how great would it have been to be in that crowd, though? You got to know, like, right off the bat, what happened next. Like, you got two Raws for the prize of one, basically.
I'm always curious about that. People who get the big deal Raws, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when you buy a ticket to a pay-per-view, you kind of have a feeling of how good the pay-per-view is going to be. You know, Over the Limit's always going to be so-so. I would love to get a ticket to, like, Money in the Bank or, you know, SummerSlam.
And for everyone who doesn't know, we're mentioning Over the Limit because that's the one that's actually going to be in our home state, and we're not really all that excited about trying to get tickets. We're just going to go to Raw.
Yeah. It's a shame. It's the first time I have access to pay-per-view tickets in 8 years.
Yeah, but it's over the limit.
I know. Yeah, so...
Which means we'll probably get a John Cena I Quit match against someone.
It's that time of the year again, isn't it?
Yeah, like every year, or ever since they started Over Limit, it's always been an I Quit match. Or a Last Man Standing match. I stand corrected.
No, it was an I Quit match, at least for the past 2 years. Batista, Last Man Standing was Extreme Rules. Because that's how I could use the tape, because it was, you know.
Are you sure? Yeah. I remember 1 year it was John Cena against Batista, and John Cena did the attitude adjustment off a car.
Yeah, that was the I Quit match.
It was?
Yeah, because he quits off the top of the car, and then Cena throws him through the floor anyway.
Yeah, okay. That's what was confusing me.
Yeah.
You're right. And then, again.
And then I'm telling you, this podcast would be so much shorter. We'd have like a 5-minute podcast.
If I just nod my head and be like, yes, Joel, you're right about everything. Computer.
And then last year was against The Miz with him and Alex
Riley.
Yeah, basically the 30-minute beatdown and Cena. That was the biggest Super Cena moment, where it was just beatdown for 30 minutes. And then he's like, you know what? No, I disagree with this. And beats Miz in like the last 3 minutes of the match. So yeah, it's getting to that time for an I Quit match again. But the thing is, like, he's feuding with Brock Lesnar now. I don't think Brock Lesnar's going to be in an I Quit match.
He wouldn't. And if he does, he's not going to agree to lose that match.
Yeah. Cena's never lost an I Quit match.
Nope.
So, I don't know. We might need to let Lesnar move on, and then somebody small can come in and quit.
You know.
Well, I mean, you know, looking over parts of Lesnar's contract have been revealed, and he's supposed to appear at least 2 Raws a month. So,
was it 2? I thought it was 1.
I think it's 2 a month, which basically is every other, if nothing else, or
right.
2 missed 2.
Did they say anything about... I can't remember exactly what the contract said, but did it say anything about pay-per-views?
It did, but I don't remember. I don't remember if it said he had to appear at every pay-per-view, or if...
I think it said he did, and then there was another stipulation of, you know, any public appearances and stuff like that.
Yeah. Whatever it is, he's clearly, like, back on the roster. He's not going to do what The Rock did. He's not going to appear on video once every 4 months. Like,
just on video if they're in a foreign country.
Yeah. I mean, he is going to be in rings, you know, hitting people.
Which is a lot more than I was going to give him credit for when he first came back, or when it was rumored that he was going to come back. I thought he was going to go the Rock route and not show up at all. That's why I was so against him coming out the day after WrestleMania, because I was like, okay, John Cena's not going to have anything to do for another year, but wait for another match.
No.
But the fact that he's getting in the ring and he's willing to compete and he's willing to get physical, you know, that you know, makes me less worried. And if they're going ahead with this now, there's no way Cena and Brock is going to meet at WrestleMania.
Not
with this feud.
I mean,
going on right
maybe
now, which makes my prediction of Brock versus Rock look that much more genius.
Yeah,
just saying.
Well, that's what I first thought was going to happen. Before looking at the contract, I thought we're basically going to get, you know, Raw right after WrestleMania. He comes out, attacks Cena. Very next week, he basically cuts a promo saying, "Hey, Rock, anybody can take out Cena. I did it in one move, but nobody can take out Brock, you and me, next WrestleMania." And then neither one of them would be there until WrestleMania. But,
right.
You know. But, yeah. Since Brock's here, let's see
how they use him.
Yeah. I'm really interested. I'm really intrigued by the fact that they're really trying to make him a heel.
They are trying hard at that.
Yeah.
And you know what? They might be like a few weeks away from actually accomplishing that. Right now, it's still too much excitement that he's back.
Yeah,
you know,
too much welcome home cheers.
He's going to get that at his first match like a first official match. And I would say a couple weeks after Extreme Rules, we'll start to hear some heel type responses from the crowd.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we're getting with Jericho. Yeah, now. Like we're just now starting to get boos at Jericho.
Yeah. So
I mean, the only problem is, you know, or the only thing is, you know, Jericho's getting it because he's doing, you know, dastardly things, and that's not Brock. Brock isn't. He's just going to kick Cena in the crotch.
Yeah.
A million times.
Well, so as long as he's fighting Cena, he won't get full on heel reactions.
No.
He's gonna have to face Cena, and then move on. And I'm really like, this is a thing where I really don't know who's gonna come out on top between Cena and Brock.
Yeah, and
it, you know,
I mean, closest that we've come to that is Brock and Cena.
Yeah,
you know, like we kind of knew in the back of our heads how it was gonna turn out, but there was still a part of us that were like. But what if they don't?
I really thought it was going to be the torch passing, Mike.
Nope. That was talk about a kick in the crotch.
I'm still a little bit stunned. It's been a couple weeks. I am still a little bit stunned that Cena didn't win at WrestleMania. I'll say it.
But it's okay because Cena's moved on. He's, you know, fighting guys like Lord Tensai.
Oh, we don't have to talk about that.
Yes, we do. Okay, we have to talk about this for one simple reason. Last week we talked about a friend of mine who was in the audience at DC on Raw. I was doing my Twitter coverage, and I had mentioned it was during the interview with Tensai and Josh Matthews.
Yeah,
and I just mentioned him, and she replied, you know. That she hated him and she felt like that was a terrible, like he's a terrible character for one, and he's a terrible way for a guy to come back after so long. And this is someone who's not even a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
But just knew from being there last week, and her own conclusions was like, yeah, this is a huge misstep. And I'm like, I've been saying that for a while. So if someone who's not even a fan can recognize that, then why can't the company, like, and it showed by putting him in the main event with John Cena.
Yeah.
What was the thinking there?
As someone who holds tickets to a Raw event in less than
me
a
too.
Month.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I am very too. Concerned that this character
very
is
concerned.
Not fading away faster.
I came up with an idea.
Okay.
That. I know initially when you told me this earlier, and I told you that if Lord Tensai is in a main event on the night that we're at Raw, I will walk home. Just from at that moment, I will walk out and walk home. I wouldn't even wait for whoever I'm riding with, or I might just leave my car if I drive. But I have a better idea. If Lord Tensai shows up at all.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, match, promo, whatever. We turn around and just face the opposite direction.
I could get behind that. Try and get the whole crowd to not watch Tensai.
To not watch, you know. And we're assuming by then we'll be world famous on Twitter.
Clearly.
We will get all of our fans in on this, and they will cut their TVs off and just sit there and watch Twitter. Until we give them the all clear, and then they cut their TVs back on.
I would be in support of that. In fact, I will go out and say, if anybody out there who is going to Raw's, if you want to take the responsibility and
go ahead and start it,
tweet
yeah.
when he comes on and when he comes off, I will watch your Twitter instead of television.
Yep.
I will create a blackout for this character. Oh man.
So here's the thing now. If you are listening to us right now and you have tickets for an upcoming Raw, follow us at CR Attire on Twitter right now and let us know ahead of time, please, for the safety of everyone, and we will get the word out to the masses, and we will follow you back.
Yeah.
We will follow you back, and you will be our best friend for the rest of time.
We will work together to correct this great injustice. And here's the thing. I'm a sucker for characters coming out of nowhere and shooting straight for the top.
Oh, like, yeah. Absolutely.
It's my favorite thing. And
especially, but the thing is, they have to be convincing. They have to be like, yes, they can get it done.
I was...
Lord Tensai is freaking boring.
Yeah.
We finished the show with a green mist.
Yeah.
A green mist. Not to mention that he had an open wound in his mouth. He got green dust stuff in an open wound. How stupid can you be? Like, I know if that was the ending that it was supposed to be.
But
someone get in touch with whoever was backstage and be like, no, cancel that ending. We will have him do something else. We can distract Cena for a little bit longer and you can pull off something else.
Yeah.
How stupid do you have to be? That's all I have to say.
Moving on. I want to continue this trend of discussing crowd reactions.
Okay.
Because Daniel Bryan tonight got the strongest face reaction. We talked a little bit last week about basically WWE trying to squash fan approval of this character, which is just insanely crazy because, he's naturally getting these positive reactions, and it's unbelievable that they would want to stop that at all. But I'm really proud of London, I have to say.
I'm really proud of London, and I am proud of what Daniel Bryan did backstage tonight. Like, it almost seemed like it was less of WWE and him trying to squash it, but more of embracing it and trying to twisting it into a heel notion.
Yeah.
You know? Like turning the LaBelle lock into the yes lock, or saying that whenever the ref asks his opponent if they're ready to tap and they're like, yes, yes, you know?
Yeah.
It's turning it, and it's molding it into whatever they want it to be. And that's something that I have to commend them for.
Yeah, I mean,
rather than just burying it and making it seem like it never happened.
Right.
Which they're very comfortable with doing.
But I gotta say, as long as this reaction continues, and again, if you're going to Raw, please keep this reaction going. Do the yes chants. Make your yes signs.
And we vow on May 7th we will do the same.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But it's a thing where, you know, the line of heels who were so entertaining that they became faces while still doing heelish antics, you know, Stone Cold, Randy Orton, et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of odd that Daniel Bryan is now quite possibly next in line to do that, because if he should, like, part of the reason I was, you know, when making predictions, I was like, if this continues, Daniel Bryan will not be a heel by this time next year. He will
if he keeps getting that reaction. Yeah,
right. And basically, will he still be the cocky, you know, I'm better than you kind of character, or will he revert back into the, you know, when he was face, he had this kind of like, oh, me? I'm a wrestler? I didn't even know. I'm here for sports and fun and good times for all. And so, you know, Stone Cold is a prime example of Stone Cold never changed characters.
Nope.
He was a heel
just the crowd
the whole
reaction.
Time, and the crowd just got so supportive of him. Randy Orton kind of watered down when he became a face.
Yeah, because I remember, like, right when he was on the edge, me and you freaking loved some Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Around that time. But now it just seems like he's watered down, you know. He's still amazing in the ring, you know. He's still as slick as ever.
Yeah, but,
he's
honorable, and he shakes hands, and he doesn't...
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, 6 months prior to turning face, he tried to punt Stephanie McMahon in the head.
Yep.
Which, you know, he was a incredibly diabolical, unredeemable heel. Like,
oh yeah, he played it very
well.
Yeah,
he did a good job at that. And so, but I'm curious to see what will happen with Daniel Bryan and how much crowd support it will take to turn face. You know, will it be this gradual thing? Like, you know, with taking Randy Orton again, Randy Orton never didn't like snap turn face. He didn't have a great face turn. It was kind of this like, he's getting more and more cheers. And
I remember it was, and I can kind of remember the exact like moment that it kind of changed for him. Like, he was still on the edge, and it was either a triple threat or a fatal four way on like Monday Night Raw, and the winner got a title shot, and he was just so on fire, like really impressive in that match.
Yeah,
and that was like the first real time Twitter went nuts over someone on Raw. And, you know, within a couple days, Randy Orton was on Twitter, and that's when it all started. And it was just, and you're right, it wasn't really an exact moment or the snap of the finger kind of situation. Like, it was a gradual thing, and he was kind of on the edge for a while. And all it took was, like, one match that really impressed everyone that kind of put him over.
Yeah.
And then from that, he just turned into the second biggest face in the company.
Yeah. But so, you know, with Daniel Bryan, is he gonna do that? Or the thing is, you know, it almost feels like CM Punk just needed one good audience. Like, he needed like one good match in Chicago, and CM Punk will turn face. And I know there's more to it than that. There's, you know, there's first of all the fact that was an amazing match.
Right. It was kind of just the mix of the perfect storm kind of situation. Like, you had the storyline that had been brewing for about a month. You had the location, you had the crowd, and then you had the match, which just really just made the whole thing explode.
Yeah. And the fact that he had left right after that, I think, you know, when he came back, he got some triumphant return cheers as much as, hey, it's a face cheers.
And to be honest, I remember that match, or that night that he came back, and that was kind of just a crap crowd, to be honest with you. And it was Virginia, I believe, and they were just kind of known for not being the most excitable crowd in history. So it was one of those things where, like, nobody was getting really big pops that whole night, and so he got much of a bigger pop the week after.
Yeah. I mean, but it's still there was a very strong possibility that he could have gotten boos for, you know, disrupting the company or whatever, since he was still going up against Cena at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much it was a natural face turn still. It was a crowd supported face turn.
But it wasn't as sudden as, well, let's go with this. Since they were in London, this just seems to be a way to go. Last year, when R-Truth turned heel, it just happened one night, and all it took was just, you know, a quote unquote friend at the time, you know, making fun of him for a little bit, and he just got pushed to.
I mean,
push too far.
Yeah, he snapped was how it was portrayed.
Yeah.
But,
and it was just, you know, really just was the drop of a hat kind of situation, which is fine. You know, the gradual stuff seemed like there's more of an art to it if it's just gradual.
Well, the thing is, you know, heel turns are much more, you know, kind of snap out of nowhere.
Yeah,
a lot of them are, you know, Mark Henry was being supportive and then halfway through a match turned on his opponent.
Yeah.
You know, just a lot of heel turns are people turning around and attacking somebody that was their friend 5 minutes earlier.
The funny thing about Mark Henry is him turning basically also turned Sheamus. like right at the same moment. Because Seamus is the one that made the comment that you haven't been relevant since President Clinton.
Right.
And that moment, that was, you know, as far as the storyline goes, that's the moment where Mark Henry was like, crap, he's right. I need to make an impact and start being such a goody-goody.
Yeah.
And that's when, Seamus got the crowd to laugh at his joke and stuff. And it took a little while for the crowd to get behind him.
Yeah. But it was still much more...
But it was so much easier for Mark Henry to just go ahead and snap and, you know, start the whole Hall of Pain thing.
Yeah. I think it's easier for creative to orchestrate a heel turn than it is to orchestrate a face turn.
Yeah.
I mean, look, basically the creative orchestrated face turns in the past year or so, like the ones that jump to mind are Alex Riley, who had major pop when he stood up to Miz, and it lasted till the next pay-per-view, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that whole thing did more to hurt the Miz than it ever did to help Mark Henry. All right.
Because one, it was them trying to make Alex Riley look like a viable opponent.
Right.
And they weren't fooling anyone, so like, okay, if Miz can lose to that guy, I mean, it's nothing.
Layla had a, you know, basically a...
Until she got hurt, yeah.
Forced face turn, but yeah, she...
And it was also just not the same to see her without Michelle McCool.
Right.
And I guess, well, I mean, you can also make the argument for R-Truth, again, you know, just kind of having to turn heel just because they got put in a corner, you know, with their storyline for, you know, he got suspended for substance violation, and the way they wrote him off was that he got attacked by The Miz.
Right.
So the logic is he had to come back and beat up The Miz for beating him up.
Right.
You know, and that was kind of a snap thing, and it was good at the time, but now we're seeing not so much of R-Truth.
It's working okay, but yeah. I mean, this past week he was only hanging out with Hornswoggle in gimmick videos. Whereas he was fast on the track for being a top heel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think
him getting involved with Miz at all... I mean, because to be honest with you, what helped the Miz the most after Alex Riley was teaming up with R-Truth, because he was the hot heel at the time.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact that they... I mean, really, the only person you can blame right now is R-Truth for the whole substance violation thing.
Yeah. But I think it killed what looked like rejuvenation of a tag team division.
Oh, yeah. There was so much ramifications from the downfall of that team.
Yeah.
And Evan Bourne, to be honest with you, at around the same time.
Yeah, both no, because that was the same time. And
huge ramifications.
Air Boom,
for that.
They kind of put all their chips in this Air Boom basket.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and now we have Primo and Epico kind of just holding on to the belts until they can figure out what to do.
More or less.
So, if there's any more of this, don't do drugs, I guess.
Because if you do, you will ruin the state of wrestling.
Yeah. You'll ruin long-term storyline plans.
That's a good way to get kids not to do drugs and not to smoke. Just, you know, put a lot of weight on their shoulders. Be like,
yeah,
if you do, this entire industry, this entire world will crumble at your feet, and we will be reduced to but dust. And out of the remains, our hands will clutch at your feet and ask, why? Why did you do this to us?
Is that about right? Just put up posters and be like, do you want these people to be tag team champion? Look at them. Look who's holding the title right now.
Oh.
This is what you did.
I think we just came up with a wrestling theme post-apocalyptic movie, sir.
I like it. It's got to be better than bending the rules.
Oh, so many things are better than that movie. Rubber is probably better than bending the rules.
I couldn't say.
And that's about a tire.
It's about a tire that kills people.
I watched it, sadly.
Netflix? Is it on Instant?
Yeah, on Netflix.
Okay, good.
I was really bored that day.
I can believe
almost, it. Almost, like, it was one of those moments where boredom had killed my self-esteem low enough to reach that level, which was the same reason why I ever watched the movie called Donkey Punch.
No
self-esteem.
I started watching Best of Nitro earlier today on Netflix Instant.
I haven't been tempted to watch that yet, and I doubt I really ever will be. The rise and fall of WCW was really good.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is I saw that pretty recently.
Oh, so you had hope that...
I didn't really, because, like, basically, especially on Netflix, when it's just a disc that is basically consists of a lot of matches, it's really hit or miss.
Yeah.
I was looking for Edge's new DVD. I really want to see that. And so I didn't think it'd be on Netflix yet.
At least the documentary part, because that's usually what ends up being on Netflix.
Yeah. So I didn't think it'd be on there yet, but I figured I'd check. And then it wasn't, but I was like, I've typed in WWE already into the search bar.
Might as well.
I got to watch one of these now.
Right now, like, out of the ones that are on Netflix right now, I would say Rise and Fall of WCW, True History of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And the Bret Hart one, I can't think of the name.
Yeah, right. It's not really a WWE awesome. Sanctioned movie.
Right.
Yeah, Wrestling with Shadows is very, very good.
And
I think Beyond the Mat is still on Netflix.
I need to watch that one.
It's really good. Especially they do stuff with the I Quit match between Rock and Mankind.
Really?
Yeah. When was that? I don't remember. It was for a pay-per-view.
Oh. I don't remember the exact day.
It was... I don't remember the day, but...
I think it was
Royal Rumble, but I won't promise that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was... It was right after...
It was
Mankind
the one where
won.
Mankind took an insane amount of chair shots to the head.
Yes.
Right?
It was that one.
Yeah.
But it was that, and... his wife and kids were in the crowd and their reactions. Mm. And it was so stressful to watch.
Oh, I bet.
But
what was fantastic about the Bret Hart one is that you got so much behind the scenes footage, and it's like, how did they, like, did they sense something was going to happen, or were they just making a documentary with Bret Hart, you know, a non-WWE sanctioned documentary, because they just had all this footage of at least, what, 6 months ahead of time?
Yeah.
Before the Montreal Screwjob, leading up to that situation, and had so much backstage footage that I'm surprised I hadn't seen at all, because I had just watched it. I watched it for the first time, I want to say about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And there was footage on there that I had never seen ever, and I've done my share of, you know, going back and looking at old Montreal Screwjob post and, you know, before footage.
Yeah.
And it was just startling to me. And that, and, you know, that the infamous meeting with Vince McMahon afterwards, that Bret was apparently mic'd. Like, he had a wire the entire time.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was a Canadian production. Like, whoever was making it. So it's very possible they were just making a documentary about this Canadian hero.
What a gold mine did that, whoever decided that idea, what a gold mine did they just happen to, you know, trip onto.
To just start it at the right time.
Yeah, they happened to be documenting at that moment, or leading up to it.
I don't know, that's...
That is some good luck right there.
Maybe
some amazing luck.
Maybe it's all been planned the whole time.
Maybe, I don't know.
That's my favorite conspiracy,
that's what originally brought you back into wrestling.
It was
because you had
dropped out
really
for
weren't
years
into it anymore. Yeah,
since, like, yeah.
And then I had told you that they were bringing that back up, and you decided that you went on like a rampage of just looking at old videos and reading blogs and stuff. And you were the expert on the Montreal Screwjob at that time when Bret Hart came back.
The thing is, like, you told me Bret Hart's back. I'm like, Bret Hart's not back. Bret Hart's never going to be on WWE. Don't be silly.
I said no.
Yeah.
Because I remember you, I think you were one of the ones that used to make fun of me for watching wrestling, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think I did nearly as much as anybody else.
Not as much as John and my roommate Jason at the time.
Yeah.
They were pretty merciless. And you know what? You know who's joining our groups to watch?
They watch wrestling now.
Pay-per-views. They watch wrestling on a weekly basis.
Yep.
Yep. All of them. Me and you, Joel.
Yep. It was, but yeah, it was very much that. It was, I might have made snide comments to you from time to time, but there was that little bit inside of me.
Yeah, nothing near. Yeah. If you did, I don't remember it quite as well as I did.
I know who Goldberg is. I used to be a fan. I thought those backpacks were cool. And then,
I can smell what The Rock is cooking.
And pretty much, yeah, that's what pulled me in. I was like, I gotta follow this Bret Hart Vince McMahon feud. And I really,
to be honest with you, I wasn't expecting you to stay with it after that match, because that was a bad, bad, bad situation.
Well, because I was watching, I mean, part of it is because I was watching again. Part of the big reason I fell out is everybody else fell out, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of, and with us, like, it gave us something to do. Like, we're, you know, college guys living in a college dorm. Not much is going on Monday night, so we just kind of sat in my room and gave us something to do every week. And then, you know, more and more of our friends got into it, so it's like, okay, well.
Yeah. I mean,
seems like a fun thing to do now.
I didn't watch on a weekly basis as a kid,
because
I was a kid, and it was the middle of, you know, the most depraved era of wrestling ever.
Absolutely. Coming from a very, very, very conservative family, wrestling was not an option. So basically, you know, hopefully my parents aren't listening to this, or they will give me a nasty, nasty phone call later. I basically watched it whenever they weren't home, or I was in, like, the other room, or, you know, something. Like, I would have to sneak, you know, glimpse, you know, pieces and snippets of Monday Night Raw here and there.
Yeah.
So I really didn't really know much about what was going on. And my best friend, he was a huge wrestling fan at the time. He would kind of keep me updated on whatever I missed. Like, he would actually get, like, the old WWE magazines. He had VHS tapes of WrestleMania, like, 1 through whatever at the time. Yeah. VHS has got him so old.
that's basically what happened is I kind of fell out of it because the people who kept me updated fell out of it.
Yeah, exactly. My best friend fell out of it.
But I do remember...
I was around high school.
Yeah.
You know, I was a teenager.
And so...
Had more different things on my mind.
Pretty much. But being a kid, see, because I didn't watch every week, it was difficult to totally understand, because the biggest thing I remember is not being there, not being active enough, not knowing enough to realize that The Rock became cool, because like, I remember people being like, you know, they would play wrestling on the playground or whatever, and so I'm like, I want to be The Rock. I'm like, nobody wants to be The Rock. The Rock is the worst. Don't we all hate The Rock?
Yeah.
Aren't we all in consensus on this? I'm like, no, The Rock is cool now.
Okay, what? And see, the thing is, I was a huge Shawn Michaels fan. And this was starting like in 95, you know?
Yeah.
And so even when DX started, I was full into it. Like, and so when Stone Cold showed up, I really wasn't. You know, because he was, you know, taking time away from Shawn Michaels. I was like, no, I'm not going to cheer for that guy. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, Shawn Michaels leaving for injury in 98.
Yeah.
And losing to Stone Cold. Like, that was just a double whammy. I was like, all hope is lost, you know. And then, like, I would check back every now and then and be like, Shawn, he's coming back? Oh, no, he's just the new commissioner. Never mind.
I did check back from time to time.
Yeah,
but I don't know if I like got terrible, because I never watched a full episode for years and years, but like if I was channel flipping, I'd pause, and it was kind of like watching, you know, like when you're a young kid and you watch like old Japanese Godzilla movies and they're amazing, yeah. and then you watch them and yeah. you're like, well, that's unquestionably a guy in a rubber suit, you know. So watching wrestling for the, you know, for the first time for a 2-minute snippet after, I remember specifically, and it probably didn't help, it was a Divas feud, and it was one diva kicking the other diva down the ramp towards the ring, and I don't remember who it was at all, but I remember being like, she is rolling. She's not really kicking her. How was I ever fooled by these terrible shenanigans?
I did the same. I would check back in every now and then, and then there was like a few years that went by, and I, you know, didn't watch it all. I checked back in, and it was the Edge Lita bed celebration episode, and I'm like, and it was just one of the things where like, wait, this is what they're doing now? This is horrible. Like, why? What? And so I was just like, okay, no, I'm way, way too sophisticated for this nonsense.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. And then I stayed away until I heard about the WrestleMania in Detroit. And I heard Shawn Michaels was going up against John Cena for the championship. And I'm like, wait, when did he come back? Like, and so it was literally from that point on that I was just nonstop.
Well, but this is always why I've always said, you know, if you had to choose between a show that was just matches and a show that was just promos, which would you watch? And I've always said I'll go with the promo show because that's what got me back into it, was the stories.
Yeah, and I mean, this is coming from two writers.
Yeah.
You know, like, stories is always going to grab us.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, it took time for us to really appreciate the match aspect and the physicality and all of that. But that came later. Like,
well,
initially it was the story.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a weird thing to say, but it's the truth. And it's the way it is. Unless people, I know a lot of people don't like to admit it, but if somebody is not gelling with certain amount of stories, then they're kind of useless in the company.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have both aspects of it.
No, it's... I had to do my obligatory John Morrison comment for the week. Like, the guy was...
You cannot go a single week.
Can't go a single week, no. Not until he comes back. But the guy was great in the ring, but couldn't carry a promo to save his life, and thus couldn't hold on to a story to save his life. And
yep.
That's why it was like, when he started causing problems backstage, that's why it wasn't that great of a loss for the company to lose him, because...
I still say bullcrap that Chris Masters got cut. He was perfect.
I've never seen Chris Masters have to carry a story. I've only seen him in matches, so...
I don't care.
I could not tell you if he had talent on the mic or not.
Chris Masters is perfect.
But...
Perfect. Have you seen the tattoos that he's gotten recently? They're amazing, because he's perfect.
Is it rumored that he might be back within the year?
No.
You get nothing. Alright, I think that is...
Well...
That is that, about it for me this week.
And there you have it, kids. The origins of me and Joel's involvement in wrestling.
Yeah.
We gave you the whole origin
Classy
story.
Ring attire, the origin story. All right.
Pretty much. That pretty much wraps it up for us. We have a very special piece of information. I alluded to it earlier. We are now on Twitter.
Yes, officially.
So we are going to start covering Raw and pay-per-views. The other shows, you know, will... Whenever we get to
cover them as they come.
Yeah, so make sure you follow us at the it's CR Attire, one word, obviously.
Yep.
Follow us on that. We love to interact with everyone out there. Send us ideas, send us thoughts, send us questions, and we'll talk about them here on the show. We also have an email now, classyringattire@gmail.com.
Yep.
you have any questions that you want us to talk about, I would love to have a mail sack segment on the show.
Yeah.
Where I will dig into the sack.
Any kind of comments, any kind of opinions,
anything.
Feel free to.
We will read hate mail.
Gladly.
I don't care.
Feel free to berate us.
I will gladly read hate mail.
Constantly.
And I will just rip into people nonstop. So if you want to challenge me to a verbal duel, I am up for it.
Where you will play both parts since it's mail.
I will play both parts. Yes. So just remember to do that. Again, it's at
CR Attire.
CR Attire on Twitter. And then our email is classyringattire@gmail.com.
All right. Look forward to hearing from you. Until next week, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.